Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. So, you know when a cat is just sitting there, staring at you, looking like they want to fight?
Or they just want to cuddle?
Yeah, I mean, depends on the cat, I think.
Or the person.
Right, well, sometimes when Ty is looking at me, I feel like he's just admiring his work. And by that, I mean all of the fucking scars that that little turd has left on my body. Now, the other day, I was looking at a scratch on my arm. You know that big one that was the length of me fucking forearm?
Yeah.
So what had happened there was I was sitting on my desk. I was typing, as you do.
Winding him up.
That's exactly it. Ty took that personally and decided to rip the bastard arm off me.
Yeah. What do you expect if you keep winding him up?
I honestly was just sitting there typing. Like,
the noise of the keys might piss him off.
He likes to sit on the keyboards, but he'll come over and start typing on it himself.
Yeah.
Every time, if I get up to go to the bathroom or something, I have to switch off the keyboard. Seriously. Anyway, yeah. So I was sat there and I was looking at the scratch, seeing how it was healing. And I looked up and I happened to see Ty looking back at me, like slow blink, like really relaxed, so at peace, so happy, very content. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's a very relaxed cat.
But it was like someone who was looking at, you know, a piece of art that they've always wanted to see. Do you know what I mean? My body to Ty is the Mona Lisa, it's the Sistine Chapel, it's the fucking what have you.
Right, well, I've heard of Mona Lisa. I have never heard of the Sistine Chapel. But I do get your point.
It's like he's mesmerised by this work of art. And the work of art is my jacked up limbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just stop pissing him off. And then stop picking your scabs.
I wasn't picking them. I was looking at it.
I pick my scabs.
Because it was an impressive scratch he had left. It was one movement. This wasn't when he latches onto my arm and tries to rip flesh off. This was, he jumped up, scrummed down the length of it.
I know a more impressive scratch. Still never got an apology for it. You fucking scarred my arm. It's the
it
one
wasn't
of the
me.
Deepest scars I have.
It wasn't me. This is another case of you and accountability, I feel.
Right, just to give you the rundown, listeners, I think we might have fucking discussed it before, nearer to the time. So this was years ago, and Megan...
Yeah, it was actually, if you think, it's about nearly 4 years ago, I think, at this stage.
Yeah. So imagine a big plastic tub, and it's full of knives and forks, and the corner of it had snapped off, so it had a sharp edge. But Megan decided to put it right, and I mean right on the edge of this unit on a tight space to walk through. So I was helping her carry some of the stuff. And as I was walking past this tight fucking spot, the corner of this plastic thing scratched my arm. So straight away I went, all I said is, Megan, why did you put it on this fucking edge? And she went, yeah, but that's not my fault. You walked into it.
Right, are you done with your side of the story? Can I give my account
That's
now?
That's exactly what fucking happened. I don't know how you're going to spin this one.
It's not spinning it. So first of all, the edge you're talking about, that's where that item goes every single time. You do it as well. I take your point. I could have took the extra second to check each edge and gone, oh, that side's a bit jagged, I'll turn it in. Take your point there. But at the same stage, I was busy. I'm trying to get through this backlog of work.
Yeah.
It's a case of get that out, get the next thing done. So I apologise for turning in, but the fact that you say I scarred you is a bit of a fucking stretch. I put something on the side where it always goes, including where you always put it.
Yeah.
You did not look or take enough care. And even if I was to say, yeah, it was a bit on the edge, Neil is notorious for walking into things. You always, the other day, you walked into the door and said, the door hit me or something, or the door whacked into me. You were in some way that was if the door had like swung and hit you. The door was stationary.
The door hit off my shoulder.
You hit off the door.
Is it either or?
Look, I could get the point you're making, but you know I've got a massive issue with you not taking accountability. So even those small little things, I notice them and they piss me off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't let that one go.
Because it was just so unnecessary for you to blame a door. But anyway, yeah, I don't believe I scarred your body, but Neil will die on that hill that I, you know, when he tells the story, it sounds like I took a blade to him, took a knife to him.
Look, if you go by the steps, would I have been scarred if you hadn't have put that there?
No, I take your point. But if you flip the situation, it could have just as easily been me getting hurt, yeah?
Mm.
Well, I say just as easy, not as easy, because I don't tend to just walk into random fucking items. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying to you is you could have just as easily put it down in the same spot.
Mm.
And I could have caught myself on it. You must have been going at some fucking speed to actually, like, because that was some damage you did. That's a big scar.
I work fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, part two.
Part two, Neil, of Peter Sutcliffe, also known as the Yorkshire Ripper.
Mm. Why are you looking at me like that already?
I'm just looking at you. Was there any, you know, because we're recording this a week later. Usually with multiple parts, we try to get them done quick.
Yeah.
It's just, it hasn't worked out that way with your schedule.
Mm.
So you've had a bit of time to kind of muse on it.
Yeah. It should have still been it round Edwia Brick at 5.
Yeah.
I think you were coming on a bit strong on his father.
I was not coming on to his father strong at all.
He were sexually assaulting his mother at 5.
No, he was not.
He said he were pulling his skirt down.
I did not say that at all.
What did you say then?
I said he used to follow his mother around and he would quite often hold onto her skirt like a comfort thing, like letting his mammy know I'm nearby, I'm here.
Right, so next time we're out and about, yeah?
Or to steady himself either. Yeah, sorry, go on.
So if I'm out and about and I'm pissed up. Now you've added the to steady him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pissed up.
Yeah.
And there's a bird in front of me with a skirt on. And I'm not pulling it down, but I'm holding on. I'm holding on for dear life.
But you don't know her. This was a little kid, a toddler, and his mammy.
Right. Okay.
Just blew up your whole scenario there, didn't I? Anyway, we're getting a bit off topic. So last week we discussed Peter's background. This week we're getting into more of the Yorkshire Ripper side of things. And we're going to be discussing the attacks and murders committed.
Mm.
So for a quick, more cohesive refresher, in part one we discussed Peter's background, his adoration for his mother as a small child. And this is possibly due to the fact that his father was such a bastard.
See, you're coming in on him again.
I feel rightly so.
But you didn't think it were rightly so that I came in on that woman for... Hang on.
What?
Hang on. Let me finish.
Yeah. Oh. Well, now, Neil. It's all coming out now, isn't it? Is this a fucking main episode or a knock and back? What's going on here?
Right. I was honing in.
Yeah, there you go.
On that woman.
Yeah.
For robbing a fiver off of him and starting this whole thing.
Yeah.
I was wrong for that apparently, but you're coming in on the father.
Because I
think
Hang on,
how come it's okay for you to say you're coming in on the father, but if I say I'm coming in on the woman.
No. You said coming on, didn't you? Like coming on to. Like hitting on, that's what I heard.
Oh, I heard something else.
But
yeah. I still think that is one of the most valid points I've made the whole time we've had this podcast. She's the cause of... It's a bit like you with that tub. What scratched my arm?
Yeah.
She is the person who put that tub there
yeah.
and Sutcliffe walked into it and scratched himself.
Right.
Hence, murdering loads of women.
Hence. I just think it's the thinnest argument ever made. But me and you did go on to discuss it a little bit further. Now, I get the point you're trying to make that it was the catalyst kind of thing.
Yeah.
I understand that. I don't agree, but I understand. I think you just made it sound very pointed towards that woman. I think I kind of bit a bit more because it disgusted me.
Because that's what you do.
Yes. But we did go on to talk about it after the fact. Just kind of like gone back and forth. And I think I made a fair point here, yeah? So, you know, it bothered you that she stole the fiver, right?
Mm.
But if you think about all the times he was watching these women work, not wanting to pay for their services, that fiver is that small little bit of retribution for all the women that he has not paid.
But when she half-inched that fiver, she didn't know that he'd been dogging.
Yeah.
So there were no justification in that.
No, but what I'm saying to you is your argument, I think, is very thin and it's very based on what you would, well, I say you, what Peter would like to put out there as the reason, and you're buying into it, yeah?
Mm.
So why can't I make a thin argument of why it's okay? Just a bit of tit for tit here, Neil.
Yeah. Bit of the old tit.
Anyway. We also talked about Peter's two stints as a gravedigger, for which the darker side of his personality was seen by his co-workers. We mentioned his love of driving without a license or insurance, much like previous serial killer that we've talked about, Lenny the Bollocks. What else? We talked about him meeting Sonia, who he went on to marry, and towards the end, we started to see the formation, the origin story, if you will, of the Yorkshire Ripper, at least according to Peter and Neil.
I liked her. I liked Sonia.
I have to be honest with you, I kind of do.
Yeah.
She's kind of like, she's just kind of saying it how it is. Whether I agree, she was a fucking strong person. Well, is. I don't think she's dead. A strong person.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like calling his family riffraff.
Saying it how it is.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I say it how it is. I don't know his family. I'm not keen on Mick or his father. I'll say that.
Yeah. If you did miss part one, yeah, Peter used to go dogging, watching sex workers with his brother.
No, they used to go out to sex workers for their services together.
Oh.
You know how it is.
Yeah.
With your sibling.
Well, that's a bit better than you both sat there knocking one out.
Is it though? I don't think any type of sexual activity with your sibling is, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. So... with all of that out of the way, are you ready to start talking about the attacks and murders at the hands of the Yorkshire Ripper?
Ready as I'll ever be.
Mm. Between 7:30 and 8 p.m. on the 11th of November 1974 in Bradford, 28-year-old student and mother of two, Gloria Wood, was making her way home when she was approached by a man who asked if she wanted him to carry her bag for her. Gloria politely declined his offer, and as she turned to walk on, she was struck four times to the head with what was later thought to have been a hammer. Gloria fell to the ground, not even feeling the hit. She was later found by a little girl whose mother then sought help. Each strike left deep lacerations to her scalp, and while in hospital, Gloria was operated on to remove splints of bone which had become lodged in her brain. She later gave a description of her attacker. She said that it was a man with dark brown staring eyes, black hair and a black beard. She said his skin was olive, not black, not white, but Mediterranean looking, possibly Greek or Italian. Neil?
Yeah?
I'm not even trying to be funny, but she just bang on described you.
Right, well, I don't like the dark brown staring eyes.
You do. You have dark brown, very big eyes. So this, I'm not necessarily saying staring.
Yeah.
But you do have very big brown eyes.
Dark brown staring eyes is not a thing. It's people like you who have that horrific staring eyes. The light blue or the grey.
Are you saying you doubt Gloria?
What?
Are you saying you doubt Gloria?
Well, it sounds like she's describing me and I don't like that.
It's bang on you.
She said, no, Olive.
Right. So when I was writing this down, I was kind of laughing because like, this is Neil. This, like, it's dead on Neil.
Mm.
I could hear, I could feel you reacting as I was reading that. You knew.
Yeah, I knew it was coming.
Yeah. I mean, that is you. I tell you where you're off the hook, Neil. She said that his hair was curly.
Yeah.
Very definitely don't have curly hair, do you?
No, I do not.
I mean, it's not to say a relative of yours couldn't have curly hair.
Like what?
What?
Like what?
You know, like a father or someone.
Yeah.
You know?
I found out anyway, he can't be my dad.
But he did DNA test, did you? Yeah?
He wasn't born the same year as my dad.
What the fuck has that got to do with it? How does that mean he can't be your father? Also, can we just note there's only a year difference between Peter and your father?
Yeah.
Mm.
But...
perfect time frame there.
Yeah, but they weren't born the same time.
How the fuck does that make a difference?
Because... I don't know.
Because it's... I do such a great job of convincing people. All these little bits I drop here and there and people go, oh, yeah, it could be. You're trying to find anything.
No, because like the average person now is an idiot. They're going to believe that. They're going to hear you. Right. Not an idiot. That's a bit strong. But they'll...
gullible.
They'll hear something and they take it as fact.
Yeah.
So if someone comes across our pod and hears you going, oh, Sutcliffe were your father.
That's what I say.
Fucking Daddy Sutcliffe. And all this fucking bollocks.
Yeah.
Then they're going to go to school or go to work and they're going to be like, podcast I'm listening to, it's the long lost son of Peter Sutcliffe. Right? Next thing I've got the BBC getting onto me going, ew, can we interview you about your father? And me being oblivious going, well, yeah, a bit random, but why?
Oh, could you imagine if you actually got onto the BBC?
And then I walk into the BBC headquarters and they're like, looks just like him. It's a spin.
Oh my God, they actually won him all.
Well, part of him's got straight hair, but everything
honestly,
else.
Seriously, Neil? Like, you do have a bit of a resemblance.
I do not.
A little bit.
Dark hair, dark beard. I wouldn't even class him as olive skinned.
You do look more like Peter Sutcliffe than your biological father. I'll say that. There is much more of a resemblance.
I look more Italian. He looks more Greek.
Take it as a compliment, though, because a lot of people said he was a good-looking fella. There's a lot of people who said that about old Petey.
Yeah, but like he looks more Greek.
Right.
You look at him, you'd think like Greek or Albanian.
Well,
or
Gloria thought Greek or Italian.
Not Italian.
I'm just telling you what Gloria thought.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, she's just been hit in the head 3 times with an hammer.
Four.
Well, was still.
She also mentioned that her attacker was smartly dressed in a dark suit. You don't tend to wear suits very often. But again, that's a bit of a... it's neither here nor there. You can change your clothes pretty easily.
I'm not allowed to dress smart. When I first moved over here, you got me to get rid of all my smart stuff.
No, I didn't. All I said to you was, why did you bring an entire bin bag full of ties? You don't even wear them for work. Your packing was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, Gloria was found by a little girl. And had it not been for children out playing nearby, which was most likely the cause to disturb Peter, Gloria may not have survived this attack. But just because she did survive, that does not mean she was not left with lasting damage. Aside from her physical injuries, Gloria suffered a breakdown and went on to receive psychiatric treatment for over 2 decades.
Fucking hell.
Police did not link this attack to the Yorkshire Ripper and Peter was never charged.
Oh.
Mm.
But you reckon it's his first attack?
It's highly likely that
Hammer,
this...
Bradford.
I mean, the description is dead on. And yeah, a hammer.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Hence why we call it a Sutcliffe.
At approximately 1:30 a.m. on the 5th of July 1975, 34-year-old Anne Rogalski was attacked in Keighley.
Keighley.
Keighley, yeah.
Yeah, you had to ask me about that one.
Yeah, because it's not spelt like Keighley.
Yeah.
So I asked Neil and he went, it's Keighley. Yeah. And I went, is it Keighley or Keighley? And he went, it's Keighley.
Yeah, Keighley.
Keighley. The name Keith Lee.
Yeah, Keith.
Keith.
It's my accent.
No, I know it's your accent, but I specifically said, yes, but Neil, if I was pronouncing it, would I say Keith? And he went, no, it's Keith. Tried to set me up. Anna was originally from County Kerry, Ireland, but had moved to Keighley with her older sister when she was just 15 years old. At the time of the attack, Anna had been in a relationship with a very abusive, controlling man who, on the night of the attack, had hidden all of her shoes in an attempt to stop her from leaving the home.
What a random bastard.
Yeah.
Like, he put all the work in, he could have just hid one of each. Like, all the left.
Well, Anne didn't actually know at the time, but she later found out this man had actually been in a psychiatric hospital and he had been given a recommendation to stay away from women for 5 years, I believe it was.
Oh.
Mm. But Anna didn't know this.
Right.
Like I said, so. If I keep saying Anne or Anna, I apologize. For some reason, a couple of times when I've been like writing stuff down lately, I keep interchanging those names. I don't know what it is. I've had a few cases with those, all three of those names coming up, and I apologize.
Well, they're quite similar.
They are, but I should be able to read a name off a piece of fucking paper.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, the attack on Anna was a calculated one in that Peter had his eye on Anna for some time. Weeks before the attack, he had approached Anna, and when she turned him down, he began to follow her. Now, luckily, she managed to evade him. But a couple of weeks following this, he follows her into a coffee shop and offers to buy her a drink. She again declines his offer. This time, he waits until she was alone, late at night. Anna was already worked up from the behaviour of her boyfriend, and once she had arrived home, she discovered that he had taken her cat.
Bastard.
Absolute bastard. But Anna wasn't standing for it. Anna went to her boyfriend's flat to confront him, and as she walked through the alley, a man asked her if she, quote, fancied it.
Fancied what?
It.
Like a ride?
Yeah. Sexual activity.
Who the fuck does that?
Creepy men.
Just go to them and go, you fancy a bit?
Yeah.
I think the worst thing I've ever heard a man say to a woman, and we were at a red light, we weren't going anywhere, and working for a company, and the driver must have been at least mid-50s, and he bellowed out of the window, do you want some of me fat?
Well, he was another man from the north of England, wasn't he?
Bradford.
Was he?
Yeah.
Could have been a cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Anne wasn't too keen on it either, and she just kind of fobbed him off and kept walking. You know, you're used to hearing guys shout stupid shit like that. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Also, you know, she was fuming. She wanted her cat back.
Yeah.
So when Anne arrives at her boyfriend's flat, she shouts out and bangs on the door. With her calls going unanswered, she then takes off her shoe, one of the few shoes she'd been left,
yeah,
and throws it through the window before storming off.
So now she's she's just left with one shoe.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, as she makes her way back, she again hears the voice asking if she, quote, fancied it. Anne, at this point, was furious. You know, not only has she been dealing with this, you know, fuckwit of a boyfriend, he's taken her fucking pet, he's not answering her, and you've got this fucking dipshit.
Yeah.
You know,
not about that.
Accosts her in the fucking alleyway. So Anne hits the man a dig with her elbow and keeps going. Just one of those fuck off type thing.
Piss off.
The man, who we now know is Peter, walks up behind her and rains down three strikes to her head with a ball-peen hammer. As Anna laid on the ground, Peter lifts up her top and slashes across her stomach. He fled the scene before inflicting any further damage after he heard a neighbour call out. Anna was found around 40 minutes later. She was taken to the hospital where she underwent a 12-hour operation to remove bone splints from her brain. The slash to her stomach was 7 inches and possibly caused by a Stanley knife, and semen was found at the scene and on her clothing, which indicated that Peter had masturbated over Anna while she laid unconscious.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Anna did survive the attack, but was left, understandably, traumatised.
Yeah.
And sadly, she did go on to attempt suicide multiple times afterwards.
Fucking hell. So Peter legged it because a neighbour shouted out.
Yeah.
But then it took 40 minutes for someone to help her.
Yeah, so where Anne was attacked, it was in the alleyway. Because I thought 40 minutes seems a long time.
Yeah.
So maybe they shouted out, looked out, didn't see anything, but they didn't right. look to the alley maybe.
They shouted, keep the noise down, and the noise did get kept down.
You set of bastards.
What?
Because the north of England. Sorry, bastards.
Yeah.
As you say.
Hmm.
Hmm. In Halifax, at about 11:45 p.m. on the 15th of August 1975, 46-year-old Olive Smelt was attacked. It was a Friday night, and as Olive often did, she went out for a few drinks at the end of her work week. It was in the pub where Olive had the misfortune of coming in contact with Peter. As Olive walked past Peter on her way to the toilet, he made a comment about how he thought she was, quote, on the game. Olive corrected Peter and moved on. But Petey didn't like being put in his place by a woman, and he hung on to that.
Who the fuck goes up to a random woman and goes, you look like a sex worker?
Peter.
Or on the game as if you look like you're on it.
Peter had no respect for women, and he had no issue with making whatever assumption he wanted. He would put women into whatever category he felt.
In the north of England?
Yeah,
they'd
I mean...
kick the shit out of you.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. I wouldn't fuck with a northern woman.
No. No.
You know?
It never works out for you.
So, like, I mean, between Olive and Anna, out of the three women we've discussed, the two women who are given an opportunity to correct Peter or retaliate have.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, northern women.
Yeah.
They don't fuck about. They get the job done.
Yeah. They wouldn't nick your shoes. They'd set them on fire.
With you still in them?
Yes.
Now, later that evening, as Olive was close to home, Peter showed up. He struck Olive twice to the head with a ball-peen hammer. He then slashes across her buttocks, leaving a 12-inch and 4-inch Y shape. Peter said of this attack, quote, I hit her on the head and scratched her buttocks with a piece of hacksaw blade or maybe a knife. My intention was to kill her, but I was disturbed by a car coming down the road. I didn't have time to finish her off.
I fucking know we ain't even got to the murders yet.
No. Now, Trevor, remember Trevor, Peter's yeah. mate?
Yeah.
He had been with Peter this night and was again waiting in the car during this attack. He later said about the attack, quote, it crossed my mind that Peter might be connected with it. What? Fucking what?
He is involved.
You know what, Trevor? Fuck you. Do you know what I mean? Even if Trevor was not to know the extent of what Peter was doing, he already knew that Peter had previously assaulted a woman, and you're telling me that he doesn't think this was a pattern of behaviour with Peter.
Yeah.
He's a fucking scumbag. I don't even know what I'm upset about. I expect no less
yeah.
from a Trevor. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Trevor, Terry, all them.
I tell you another thing as well. It's coming back round, Neil. This goes hand in hand with what we mentioned in the last episode. You know, people who drink with others, even if they don't like them, or same goes for shitty people. They tend to stick close by. Shit sticks to shit.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Neil, write that down. Put on a t-shirt.
Not always. Sometimes it bounces off.
Does it?
If it's hard.
Have you experimented with this?
Well, it's like if you take Norman out, sometimes it'll like hit off another one and bounce off. It doesn't always stick.
Anyway, Olive was later found by a neighbour and subsequently taken to the hospital. Once able, Olive gave a description of her attacker and the attack itself. But the police did not believe her account. They instead tried to put the blame on her husband, Harry.
Bastards!
Oh, it gets worse. Police described Olive as a woman of, quote, loose morals. And this was because she was married but would attend public houses on her own.
What?
Yeah. They said that although she had no convictions or cautions for prostitution, she could be described as a, get ready for this, quote, enthusiastic amateur. Neil.
Loose woman?
My jaw hit the floor when I read that.
She should sue.
You know, whoever said that about her needs stringing up by the bollocks.
Yeah.
Enthusiastic amateur? How dare you? On the 27th of August, 1975, at about 11 p.m, 14-year-old Tracy Brown was attacked. While on her way home that night in Sildon, Tracy stopped to take off her platform shoes. While doing this, she looked up and saw a man stood looking at her. He walked on and Tracy, making the same way, soon caught up with him. The two ended up walking together and chatting for about 30 minutes. He asked her name and he told her that his name was Tony Jennis, a similar name to a friend of hers, Tony Jennison. Interesting that he happened to choose a name so close to a friend of hers.
Mm.
Certainly a way of breaking the ice and triggering a conversation.
Yeah, but you don't do that. Like, if you get talking to someone, you know, I won't go up to someone and be like, oh, hi, I'm Neil Johnston. It's, yeah, I'm Neil. I'd never...
Yeah.
A surname is more, like, personal. It's...
Yeah.
People you know your surname.
Exactly. It's kind of, it's so fucking deliberate of Peter, and it's kind of the whole thing of...
Strategic.
You were watching her, you were figuring out about her.
Yeah.
Now, Tracy said this man was unassuming and charming. He seemed to know the area, his accent was relatively local, she didn't feel that anything seemed off about the man. It was when they reached the gateway to Tracy's farm that Tracy was struck 5 times to the head. Quote, I heard him grunt like Jimmy Connor serving each time he struck.
Look.
Yeah. You okay?
Yeah.
Anything you want to say?
What a weird fucking way to describe someone hitting you.
Yeah.
Sounds like a tennis player.
It's another reason why I love Northerners. How they describe things at times, I fucking love it. So when her attacker noticed the headlights of an approaching car, he then picks her up and throws her over the fence into a field and walks away.
Fucking just dumped her.
Literally just picked her up and tossed her aside. She's been through enough. Could you imagine how disorientated you're going to be and someone just picks you up and hoofs you into a field?
Yeah.
So like I said, he's walked on. Meanwhile, Tracy is weak, but still conscious. Her vision is going and her eyes are filled with blood. But Tracy kept going out of fear that the man would come back. She makes her way through the fields to a farmhand named Fred Hargreaves. Fred cleans Tracy up and drives her back to the farm. From there, Tracy was taken to the hospital where she underwent a 4-hour surgery to remove a bone fragment from her brain caused by a ball-peen hammer.
Yeah.
Tracy survived and was able to give a brilliant description of her attacker. Remember, she had spent 30 minutes walking and talking with this man. So with Tracy's description and the photo fit they made, it was so good and so accurate that when Peter saw it in the paper, he laughed and joked with his mother-in-law saying, look, this could be me.
What?
That's the level of confidence here.
What? If you saw a mugshot,
mm-hmm.
or if I came to you with a mugshot, you haven't seen it. I've come to you. You know, I'm scrolling through Instagram or Facebook and I've gone, that mugshot, doesn't it look like me? Would a part of you be like, yes, is it?
Do you mean a mugshot or the actual?
The sketch thing, yeah. Would a part of you, right, we've been together 10 years.
Yeah.
But if I came up to you and went, I think that sketch looks like me.
I'd probably like laugh and be like, it does look like you. I don't think I'd actually think it's you. Like his mother-in-law. You're not going to think it. And he's like double bluffing it, like showing it to her, being like, looks like me, doesn't it? You're never going to think for a sec that, you know, son-in-law or whoever it is close to you is going to do that, you know?
So basically, if I were around back then, people would have been looking at me going, I'm sure he looks like him off that sketch.
They honestly would have, Neil. You would have been pulled up quite a few times, I believe.
Okay.
Mm. Now, although Tracy's attack was later linked to the Yorkshire Ripper, it was not immediately, as Tracy was not involved in sex work.
But it's the hammer.
Yeah, even after Tracy had been identified as one of the victims of his attacks,
yeah,
he was never charged with her attack. Once they'd gone through the process, they were kind of like, well, we're not going to just add more on for the sake of it. Which obviously for Tracy was kind of like, what about me?
Yeah.
What about justice for me?
Madness.
Not the band.
No, because, yeah. No, because I thought it doesn't matter if you've already been, you know, gone through the trial and everything and you've been sentenced. If something else comes out, you get dragged back into court.
Yeah.
And they add on.
Yeah, I think with this case, because as we'll find out, there was a hell of a lot of fuck-ups by the police. I think once it was done and dusted and they knew he wasn't getting out of prison, they didn't really want to bring up their investigation again. They didn't really want to kind of deal with it. They're kind of like, look, he's locked away.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You got that door shut.
Not just how badly this investigation was handled, but how much money they put into it.
Yeah.
They really didn't want to put a pence more.
Right. A penny.
I had to stop myself from saying cent, pence. At about 1:30 a.m. on the 30th of October, 1975 in Leeds, 28-year-old Wilma McCann was murdered. This was the first known murder attributed to the Yorkshire Ripper. Wilma was originally from Scotland and had moved to Leeds at the age of 18. She met a man named Gerald McCann from Derry. The two married and went on to have four children together, Sonia, Richard, Dana and Angela. The marriage did not last long as it was tainted by infidelity on both sides and physical and emotional abuse at the hands of Gerald. After the breakdown of their relationship, Wilma never received any form of benefits or financial support from Gerald, and so, when needed, Wilma would support herself and her children through sex work. On the night that Wilma was murdered, she was last seen trying to thumb a lift. This must have been how she came in contact with Peter. Wilma's body was found at 7:41 a.m., less than 150 yards from her home by the milkman and his 10-year-old brother. She'd been left lying on her back, still grasping the strap of her handbag. Her trousers pulled down to her knees, and her top was pulled up, exposing her breasts. Her hair was matted with blood from the blow to the head, and her body was covered in stab wounds. One to her neck, two below her right breast, three below her left breast, and nine to her abdomen. Semen was found on the back of her trousers and underwear. As with Anna, this indicated that Peter had masturbated at the scene while Wilma was dying or after her death.
I know it's difficult to get into the mindset of a killer, but what do you think is, like, how do you think they
How do you get to that point?
Like, what do you think's going through their head while they're stood there? Knock him on out. They must feel pathetic.
I think
they must be like, this is so fucking bad.
I think they are sexually aroused by inflicting pain and suffering.
Yeah.
And I think also, at least in Peter's case, a little bit of a problem with his willy. Had to get to that extreme to do it.
Right. Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, like it's a more severe case of, you hear about blokes who, you know, they'll watch porn, you know, and then they'll start amping it up on the porn and they start getting to more hardcore fucking stuff. And then if they watch regular, what we call regular porn.
Yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
It don't do it.
Yeah.
So it's a more severe case of that.
It's entirely conceivable. Like, we know that Peter went to sex workers. It's entirely conceivable that if he was going to one and he couldn't rise to the occasion, that he would take his anger and frustration out on the woman.
Hmm. Yeah. And a northern woman would have been like, what's wrong with you?
Well, Peter did say that Wilma had mocked him during their encounter and he didn't take kindly to that.
Yeah.
At about 6:30 p.m. on the 6th of January, 1976, 18-year-old Rosemary Stead was attacked in Bradford. Rosemary had finished her shift in the supermarket later than usual, and as she walked home that evening through the darkened alleyway, Rosemary was hit on the back of the head and knocked unconscious. Just before this, she had been aware of a man walking not far behind her. Both people passing by on foot and in cars disturbed her attacker. When Rosemary regained consciousness, she managed to make her way to her home where her brothers tended to her. Her attack was not linked to the others, but the description given by those passing by was a match to Peter. In Leeds, on the 20th of January 1967 at about 7:30 p.m, Emily Jackson was murdered. Emily married a man named Sidney Jackson at the age of 19, and the couple went on to have four children together. The marriage was violent at times, with Sidney having, on one occasion, broken Emily's collarbone with a poker.
What do you mean a poker?
A fire poker.
Oh, a fire poker. Okay.
Well, that's what I took it. It was just said a poker. When you say poker to me, I think of a fire poker.
I think of the game. Poker.
How would you break someone's collarbone with the game of poker?
That's why I was confused as
well. It got aggressive, you know. Someone was bluffing a bit too much. Is that what the angle you're going for?
I didn't know. Mm. That's what I was questioning. But a fire poker.
Yeah, I would take it to be a fire poker, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. That'd break someone's bones.
The couple ran a roofing business together. Sydney would complete the jobs while Emily handled the business side of things and drove Sydney to and from said jobs. When the business hit hard times, Sydney claimed that Emily had volunteered to tide them over by entering sex work. Sydney would drink in the pub while Emily would scout out clients, often using the van if the men did not have their own vehicle. On the night of the murder, the van was full of building materials, and so Emily ventured onto the street to look for clients. It was here she came in contact with Peter. They agreed on a price of £5, and Emily got into his car. Once parked up, Peter feigned car troubles and lifted the bonnet. With no torch, Emily used her lighter to help Peter see. This was when Peter hit Emily over the head with a hammer.
Got the bonnet up and she went, "Oh, we are lighter."
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
She was trying to help him see what he was doing.
Yeah, but there's fuel lines.
It was the 70s, they didn't worry about that.
Yeah.
She's only trying to help.
She could have killed both of them.
You turn on Emily like. So Emily was actually murdered. You're saying she could have killed both of them. If anything, Emily would have been doing the world a service.
I said that about the father, and you had a problem with that.
No, but at this point, he's Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Hmm.
At that point, he was a 5-year-old child getting abused by his father.
Yeah. No, but I was meaning that, you know, when people say, would you go back in time and kill baby Hitler?
Yeah, no, I understand that, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, I don't have much good to say about his father, but his father was never to know Peter would go on to do what he did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Emily's body was found the following morning at 8:10. She was laid on her back with her right leg bent upwards and outwards. On her right thigh, there was an impression from a shoe, a size 7 Dunlop Wellington boot. A matching print was found on the ground nearby. Bruises and abrasions to her face and throat indicated that she had been dragged across the ground face down. As well as a blow to the head with a hammer, Emily had been stabbed 52 times with a screwdriver, with wounds to her throat, chest, abdomen and back.
Fucking hell.
Now, with Emily's murder, police did link it to Wilma McCann's, and this was due to the close proximity.
Just to go back, right? Imagine you're a geezer, yeah?
Yeah.
And you're thinking, right, I'm gonna go and meet up with a sex worker tonight.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I would put on is wellies.
Well, I'm guessing...
Bugger to get off.
Well, you're just going to scoot your trousers down, aren't you? I don't think you're necessarily going to take your shoes and all off. Christ, now. Getting comfy, aren't you? You're only in the back of a car.
No, but you know when a bloke pulls his trousers down?
Yeah.
To like his knees?
Yeah.
They look fucking pathetic.
It's not the best look, no. I'm just saying, if you're in a car, you're somewhat limited on movement. So you're probably just going to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not a good look, though.
No, it's not. Not so much. What if he took the trousers off completely, but left the boots on?
That'd be better.
Yeah? You into that?
No. No, I'm not into it.
It's certainly a look, though, and you respect that.
And with a screwdriver, is it flat blade or Phillips? So I don't know which you'd use.
Peter had multiple screwdrivers that he used.
Right.
And he had also altered them, like kind of shaved them down.
Right. So I was going to say, like, you need a lot of fucking force to use a screwdriver.
Yeah, I believe he did use a lot of force, yeah.
No, I mean, of a lot of force.
No, I know. I know what you're saying, because to us, you know, people who don't tend to stab people with screwdrivers, it's kind of, it seems like an odd choice.
Yeah.
But, you got to think about someone who's in like a fucking frenzied state.
Yeah.
You know? They fucking do some damage with a spoon.
Yeah. Like smacking your teeth off it. That does my head in.
There's nothing worse than hitting a fork off your teeth.
That's a spoon, I said.
Well, I'm saying a fork. Either or, though. It's awful, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get like a little mini heart attack when you do it. On the 9th of May, 1976... at about 4 a.m., 20-year-old Marcella Claxton was attacked in Leeds. Marcella was a mother of two and 3.5 months pregnant at the time of the attack. As Marcella walked home from a party in the early hours, a man pulls up in his car and offers her a lift. She gets into the car and they later pull up at a park. Marcella gets out to use the bathroom, but Peter claims that they went to the park to have sex. Whatever the case may be, this park was where Peter struck Marcella a staggering 8 times to the head with a ball-peen hammer. As Marcella laid in the grass, she was still conscious and remembers Peter undoing his trousers and beginning to masturbate. Once her attacker had gone, Marcella used her underwear to hold against her wounds in an attempt to stop the bleeding. She later underwent surgery with 52 stitches needed to close the wound, as well as miscarrying her baby.
Fucking hell. 52?
52. And Marcella's attack was not linked until Peter's confession years later. This could have been due to the fact that the police seemed hesitant to believe her when she said she was attacked by a white man, as Marcella was black.
What?
Yeah. They wanted to believe that she must have been attacked.
Yeah.
By a black guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, a white person wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
They fucking would.
Yeah.
And they did.
We talk about quite a few of them on this podcast.
Yeah.
On the 29th of August, 1976, in Bradford, at about 1:30 in the morning, 39-year-old mother of four, Maureen Hogan, was attacked as she walked home. It was about 5 hours later that she was found by a milkman and subsequently taken to the hospital. Maureen had multiple wounds to her head and stabs to her abdomen. Maureen's attack was not linked.
Do you know, that must be a hard job to do. Because you are one of the first out. Milkman.
Yeah, you'd see some shit.
Like, fucking hell. That's two just in this episode that a milkman's found them.
Bread delivery man. There's another one.
Milkman's out before bread delivery. That's her.
I think it's a similar time, isn't it?
No, because bread delivery is to businesses. Milkman's residential. Yeah, you've got much more to fucking do.
You're going to see some shit in residential areas.
Yeah. Mm. But it's not just a they're out earlier because they've got more stops. They're stopping at fucking how many houses?
Yeah.
Whereas a bread delivery is, they might do 5 or 6 fucking drops. I don't know, bread delivery person, if they're listening.
To my mind, I'm thinking of bread delivery truck. So you may be making less drops, but you're doing more distance. You're covering more space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to target milkmen.
What?
Mm.
Why do you say it so sinister?
What do you mean?
I used to target milkmen.
I did. I'd fucking watch how they'd operate and my best...
Like father, like son?
...opportune to... What?
Go on, sorry.
I was taking a bottle of milk or a bottle of orange.
Yeah. It's the wording, though. I used to watch them operate.
Yeah, I did. For the opportune time for me to where I should stand and where I could get it without being seen. I never got caught, not once.
Yeah.
I'd go out to do, you imagine, little Neil going out to do his paper round. I'd have a full glass bottle of orange or a full glass bottle of milk while I'm doing my rounds.
Did you ever rob a yogurt? No.
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 No. Drink.
No, I'm just thirsty, like.
Fucking am. Doing a paper round. Should have seen him on Sundays.
On the 5th of February, 1977, 28-year-old Irene Richardson's body was found in the same park as where Marcella had been attacked. Not so fun fact. Jimmy Savile's apartment overlooked this park.
Do you know, it's funny you should say something about Jimmy Savile.
Okay.
When I was looking up for which photos to use of Peter Sutcliffe for our social media posts, there's a picture of him with Jimmy Savile.
What?
There's a picture of him, Jimmy Savile and Frank Bruno together. I don't know why, because...
Is it a real photo?
Well, it looked real. I wasn't sure if it was Peter Sutcliffe, but it was an older, fatter guy with dark hair, dark beard.
Older, fatter guy?
Mm.
You're talking about Peter?
Yeah.
Well, Peter would have been long in prison.
Yeah. It looked like he was getting a visit from Frank Bruno.
Yeah. That sounds like you've seen an edited photo.
Right.
Why would Frank Bruno visit Peter Sutcliffe in prison?
I don't know. That's what I was thinking.
Why would he do it with Jimmy Savile?
Charity thing?
For Peter Sutcliffe?
I don't.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Anyway, back to Irene.
Mm-hmm.
Although her childhood was described as unremarkable, Irene ran off to London at the age of 15, and this was the beginning of a more turbulent life for her.
Mm.
By the age of 19, she had already birthed two children. She went on to have two more children to her then husband before leaving the family, possibly due to postnatal depression. She supported herself through a combination of cleaning jobs and sex work while without accommodation and struggling with depression. It was 7:30 in the morning when Irene's body was found by a man out jogging. She was laid face down by the changing rooms. Her hair was matted with blood. The blow to her head was so severe that, during the post-mortem, they discovered an almost circular fragment of bone which had been driven into her brain. This would have been as a result of the hammer having become lodged in her head by the sheer force of the blow. There was gaping stab wounds to her neck and throat, as well as stab wounds to her stomach with one large slash across which caused her intestines to become exposed. Her coat had been draped over her and her boots carefully placed over her thighs. Her skirt had been pulled up and her tights pulled off her right leg. Her used tampon was found nearby, as well as a 4-foot trail of blood, which led to her handbag, indicating that she had been dragged. Semen was found on the inside of her coat and the outside of her tights and underwear, again leading us to believe that Peter had, once again, masturbated following this frenzied attack.
It seems to be escalating, though. This one seems to be more...
Very vicious.
Yeah.
Tire impressions were also taken from the scene, and Irene's murder was not linked to Wilma or Emily's until 3 months later.
Like, how?
I know. How? On the 21st of April, 1977, in Leeds, 18-year-old Deborah Schlesinger was murdered. After spending the evening out with her friends, Pat and Anne, the three walked home together. They reached Anne's home first, followed by Pat's, And lastly, Deborah had to walk around the block to her home. Just as she approached her front door, Deborah was stabbed in the heart before being chased across the street, where she then fell, slumped into a doorway. Pat and her father heard the screams from their home, and Pat quickly ran out to find her friend dead in the doorway. Deborah's murder was not immediately linked to the Ripper for two reasons. The first being that she was not in sex work, and the second that she had not been struck with a signature weapon, a hammer.
Yeah, I can understand that one more.
I was about to say, it's slightly more understandable in this case.
Yeah.
Yes. But still, like I've mentioned previously on the podcast, sometimes we do ourselves a disservice by being too closed off.
Yeah.
Profiling is obviously a very helpful tool, but if it becomes a case of this is not their usual MO, therefore it can't be, investigations kind of get pigeonholed and, you know, you shouldn't be so convinced of your own theory that you disregard others.
Yeah, yeah.
At about 11:15 p.m. in Bradford on the 23rd of April 1977, just 2 days following the murder of Deborah, 32-year-old Patricia Atkinson was murdered within her flat. By the age of 22, Patricia had been married for 6 years and was a mother to three. And as is not unusual for someone who has settled down so young, Patricia decided that she wanted to experience other aspects of her life and relationships with other people. Through this, she and her husband stayed together for the sake of their children before Patricia finally left the home in 1975. After this, Patricia entered into sex work. On the night of her murder, Patricia was extremely intoxicated, and this was when Peter picked her up. She told him that they had a flat that they could use and directed him towards the address. The following day, at about 6:30 p.m, Patricia's boyfriend arrives at her flat. There was no answer, and so he tries the door, which was open. Inside, he found a pool of blood on the floor, and Patricia laid on the bed, her face and arms sticking out from underneath the covers. Her body was pale, and he knew she was already dead. Patricia was laid face down with her bra undone and her jeans and underwear pulled down below the knee. Her hair and bedding had become saturated in blood. She'd been hit over the head 4 times with a hammer. There were 6 stab wounds to her stomach, scratch marks from the claw end of the hammer, and bruising to her right leg indicating that she had been stood on or stamped on. A bloody size 7 Dunlop Wellington boot print was found at the scene. This later linked Patricia's murder to Emily's. Patricia was the only woman killed by the Yorkshire Ripper who was in full-time sex work, as well as being the only one killed indoors.
I'm going to say, if they didn't link that one with the fucking Dunlop welly, then I'd give up.
Well, like I said, I think it's interesting to note as well, Patricia was the only woman in full-time sex work.
Because that's what he's known for.
Yes, people...
He killed sex workers.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's very important
to
remember that.
Like, I know I'm not massive... Like, I'm not massive on true crime, but I'm from the vicinity.
Yeah.
And even I thought he killed sex workers.
You would, because that's what they always push out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've probably said that before.
Yeah, it's probably your fault then.
It could well be my fault. On the 26th of June, 1977, at about 2 a.m. in Leeds, 16-year-old Jane McDonald was murdered. Jane lived just 6 houses down from Wilma McCann and had babysit for her a few times. She was described by one of her neighbours as, quote, a smashing girl with film star good looks, but absolutely unspoilt. On the night that she was murdered, Jane had gone out dancing with some of her co-workers. After leaving the venue, Jane walked on with the boy she'd been dancing with that night. They later parted ways after Jane reassured him that she would take a taxi home. But with no answer at the kiosk, Jane made her way on foot. It was approximately 7:45 in the morning when Jane's body was found by children playing in the area. There was a trail of blood from the pavement towards the soil. Jane was laid face down, her legs straight, but her feet crossed. There was multiple blows to her head, fracturing her skull. There were scratches and cuts to her chest, and a large wound to her abdomen with a piece of broken bottle top lodged into it. A stab wound to her back had penetrated her heart, kidney and lungs. The severity of damage caused by the wound was because the blade had been thrust as many as 20 times. Now, the murder of Jane challenged what police had previously thought. Her injuries were undeniably caused by the same killer. But Jane, she didn't fit the idea of the quote-unquote type of woman or girl he was attacking.
It doesn't seem like he has a type, it's a woman.
To the police, they are so fixated on sex workers.
Right, okay.
But, regardless of this, her murder was immediately linked to the Yorkshire Ripper.
Right.
On the 10th of July 1977, 42-year-old mother of three, Maureen Long, was attacked at about 3 a.m. in Leeds. Maureen had long suffered with anxiety, something that contributed to the breakdown of her marriage. The night that Maureen was attacked, she had been out dancing and said that she had drinks bought for her off, quote, various men. Fucking go on, Maureen. Like, three kids to take care of while struggling with anxiety. She deserved to let her hair down.
Yeah, but I don't get that.
This is Maureen's words. Various men. I had drinks bought for me off various men.
Yeah. But I don't get the anxiety thing.
What do you mean?
Well, like, oh, that's why the marriage fell apart. But you can go out fucking to discotheque.
I'm guessing, you know, it was day-to-day life, you know, it was a lot on her. Maybe that was her way. Just once she has a drink, she relaxes. She, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's her fucking, you know, chances are she's probably having a couple of drinks before she left to work up.
Well, that's what we all do.
I mean, I can, as someone who is riddled with anxiety, I can certainly understand that. You know what I mean?
I'm not riddled with anxiety and yeah, I'll have pre-drinks.
We all have pre-drinks, Neil.
Yeah.
Don't we?
It's cheaper.
Yeah, of course it is.
And you don't feel the cold when you go out.
That is another good point.
Mm.
It was about 2 a.m. when Maureen left the club and Peter pulled up to offer her a lift. And Maureen accepted. Maureen was found later that morning by two women while out walking their dog. Maureen was laid on the ground, her bra had been pulled down to her waist, and her tights and underwear had been pulled down to her knees. Her dress had been pulled down from her shoulders and up to her waist. Maureen was taken to the hospital. Her injuries included a blow to the back of the head with a ball-peen hammer, 5 stabs to her torso and left shoulder, with 1 penetrating her liver, and 3 fractured ribs, indicating that she'd been kicked or stamped on.
Like stomping again.
That is one of the most fucking awful.
It's a bit like spitting.
Images. Yeah, it's
like
just
spitting
so,
on someone.
It's so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Her handbag and one of her shoes was missing from the scene, and Maureen's attack was linked to the others, but her attack differs from them in the fact that during the previous assaults, Peter had been disturbed. This time, he thought Maureen was dead.
Right.
In the aftermath of the attack, Maureen suffered from blackouts, headaches, nightmares and fits. She was terrified to go out. But I tell you, that didn't stop Maureen from helping the investigation. And she did so by attending pubs and clubs with officers in an attempt to pick out the man who had attacked her. Now, the only problem with this was the officers were given £15 for expenses. But they actually ended up spending £78 because Maureen, quote, liked to drink.
Fuck off.
How the hell? God love her. Like, but she probably needed for her nerves. How in the name of fuck did they end up spending that much in the north of England in the 70s?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Oh, I bet they were having a drink and all.
Well, this is the thing, right? So, like, they even said that. So, the officer had to kind of sit there and kind of pretend to be her boyfriend kind of thing. And he was just saying, like, Jesus Christ, the amount we spend.
Yeah.
I fucking love Maureen. 78 quid? North of England, 70s, Neil.
Yeah.
When you were going out when you were younger, like on a night out, you said you spent about £100, but that was including food, taxi, the whole lot.
Food, taxi,
in the 2000s.
Drinks. Yeah.
Like Maureen.
Late 2000s.
Late, no less.
Well, yeah, because I left school in 2005.
Yeah, you were in like your late teens, weren't you?
Yeah.
Fucking Maureen. God love that woman. On the 1st of October 1977, in Manchester at about 10 p.m., 20-year-old Jean Jordan was murdered.
Manchester?
Manchester, Neil.
But this is Yorkshire Ripper.
It is, but he ventured out a little bit at times.
Right.
Hmm.
I didn't know that. I thought they were all in Yorkshire.
No, you're wrong. When Jean was just 16 years of age, she ran away from home. She ended up in London, where she supported herself through sex work. While there, she entered into a relationship with a man named Alan. A year into their relationship, Alan said that Jean confessed that she wasn't really a receptionist as she had told him, but that she was actually in sex work. Alan said, quote, "It didn't matter to me at all. I was hooked, and I loved her."
That's nice.
It is. Good old Alan.
I couldn't do that, though. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
No, it's fair.
Why are you laughing at me?
No, it's just like, that's nice. Not for me, though.
It's not for me.
I think, you know, like if someone was like, what do you mean? Blah, blah, blah. It's the same way, like if someone was, you know, a boxer or something. There's a lot of women who say, like, I wouldn't want to be with a guy who does whatever combat sport, because he'd be that worried about them getting hurt or, you know.
Yeah.
Not for you.
No.
It's just not for you.
Slightly different activity.
No, I'm just saying though, because like, I think some people, like say if you said that, some go, oh, why? You judge him. It's like, no.
Yeah.
It's just not for you.
That's what I mean. People would take it like, what, are they dirty? You know, is that what you're trying to say? No, it's just...
But would you want to be with a traffic warden?
No.
Absolutely fucking not. No. Just a preference, isn't it? Anyway, Jean and Alan. The couple moved in together and welcomed two children before settling in Manchester. It was around 10:30 a.m. on the 10th of October that Jean's body was found in an allotment by Jim Morrissey and Bruce Jones. Now, for those of you who are unaware, Bruce Jones is an actor who later went on to play Les Battersby in Coronation Street.
Oh, shit.
Mm.
Oh, and for you lot who aren't aware, an allotment is like shit. What's up with you?
Because you did that so well, how smooth you transitioned it. You didn't start laughing or anything first. You just went, oh,
I wasn't
also
taking the piss.
You don't think people are going to know what an allotment is?
Yanks might not call it an allotment. I don't know. Right, again, before I was rudely interrupted, an allotment is like a garden shed. You'd get like a plot of land and you'd get like a greenhouse or a shed and then a bit of...
Land
to like plant stuff on.
Yeah.
But Les Battersby.
Les Battersby.
He
and Jean Jordan, yeah.
So where I used to live, when I lived in West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
He had a nightclub.
Did he?
Yeah. He owned a nightclub just down the road.
Mm.
And that's where kids would go for pop and crisp night.
Right. It all comes back around, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm.
Also, I don't like the fact that you just said, oh, he's known for Les Battersby in Coronation Street. Are we forgetting he was in the Full Monty?
He was and all. Yeah, you're right.
The nervous guy auditioning.
Bless him.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it down a notch now.
Mm.
Now, like I said, I was about to say Les. Bruce was the one who found Jean's body. He did not come across her body immediately, see her and, you know, report it. Her body was kind of concealed. And Bruce said that as he was going back and forth in the allotment, he had actually wheeled the wheelbarrow over her.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, of course, he wasn't to know.
Fucking hell, Bruce. It wouldn't have gone over smoothly first time.
No, but it's uneven terrain. It's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, in hindsight, this poor man, you know, not only did he find her body, but, you know, he would have, I'm sure, probably had it in his head, kind of like, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
Although,
yeah,
you know, of course, he's not to know. How can he fucking know, you know?
Would be uneven. And I think I've heard that before about him, but he'd found the body.
I didn't know. I'm nearly positive we had watched something together and you knew, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
There was 11 injuries to Jean's head. The hits were powerful enough to loosen 4 of her teeth, as well as tooth fragments being found in her mouth. 19 wounds to her shoulder, neck, and torso caused by a hammer. Her abdomen had been slashed open and her intestines were exposed. Not only were they exposed, but they had also been sliced as well. Peter would later say in his confession that the smell was that bad, he immediately vomited.
Okay, now.
Mm.
Can I just say, just to point out, and I'm not speaking for everyone,
mm-hmm.
but for people who are more ignorant to true crime, like I am, I was going to say like I was, but I still quite am. Still very much am. Is that not...
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And you get into that hole and you don't know how to get out of it.
But what I was going to say is people who are a bit more ignorant to true crime, what we think of Yorkshire Ripper
mm-hmm.
is he attacked sex workers.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much run up, hit him over the head with a hammer and fuck off.
Yeah. And I mentioned in the last episode, I think, and I know I very much kind of associated the fact that he was a lorry driver. You kind of get this notion yeah. in your head that it was like while he was on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
He was doing these things.
Yeah. No, that's what it were. It were hitting him around Edway and Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Just random attacks, hitting him around Edway and Hammer and fucking off. That's what we were. It's not what we were told. It was just what you...
It's kind of more so what's put out there.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
More lacerations were present on her right thigh, and marks on her neck showed that the killer had attempted to decapitate her using a hacksaw. Now, the severe cut to her abdomen and the attempt at removing her head, this mutilation was done at a later date when Peter had returned to her body. Yes, yeah, so the reason he had returned was to search for a £5 note which he had given her, and he did this just the night before her body was discovered.
He's getting braver.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a fresh £5 note. He didn't want that traced.
Mm.
Now, as Jean's body had gone undiscovered for days, maggots had begun to appear in the wounds. And judging by the age of the maggots, the pathologist believed that her death occurred 9 to 10 days before the discovery. So, you know, again, at that stage, the body's been sat for a bit. It just adds to what Bruce went through.
Yeah, yeah.
In Bradford, on the 10th of October 1977, at about 10:45 a.m, 20-year-old Carol Wilkinson was murdered. So, pretty much at the same time that Jean's body was discovered. That day, Carol was walking to work due to a bus strike. She took a shortcut down a laneway which ran behind her workplace. It was here where a man, taking the same shortcut, later found her body. Carol was laid face down in a pool of blood. She'd been hit over the head with a hammer. Her trousers and underwear were pulled down and her bra was pulled up. Carol was still alive and she was taken to the hospital. She had suffered multiple skull fractures and had severe brain damage. She was placed on life support, but the decision was made to switch off the machine 2 days later on the 12th of October. Despite Carol actually having links to Peter Sutcliffe, her murder was not linked to the Yorkshire Ripper, and instead, another man named Anthony Steele was convicted. Now, Anthony was a vulnerable person who was put under intense pressure from the police. He spent 20 years in prison before his conviction was quashed in 2003, and he received £100,000 in compensation.
That's it?
Yep. And in 2007, just 4 years after his conviction was quashed, Anthony died of a heart attack at the age of 52.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like all these knock-on effects, how it's destroying other people's lives.
Mm.
You know, just yeah. this fucking trail of destruction. At about 8:30 p.m. on the 14th of December 1977, 25-year-old Marilyn Moore was attacked in Leeds. Marilyn had left home at 15, married a year later, and had two children before leaving the family home and supporting herself through sex work. After Peter picked up Marilyn that evening, he drove out to an area which he later described as an oasis of mud, just 200 yards from where Wilma's body had been found. As Marilyn got out of the car to get into the back seat, Peter hit her over the head with a hammer. But with the ground being so muddy, he slipped. And with this blow not being as powerful as he had planned, it allowed Marilyn to let out a scream. Peter struck Marilyn another 7 times before fleeing the scene, but not without difficulty, as his tires at first span in the mud.
You know when he said oasis of mud?
Mm-hmm.
So does he mean a circle?
I think just a large area.
Because when I think of Oasis, obviously there's the band, but I'm not talking about the band.
Not this time.
Oasis is the food hall in Meadowhall. And it's just a big round area. So I wondered if that's why it's called Oasis. Does Oasis mean round?
I took it to mean just, like, let's say an area that was once a green, but it's had this shit ripped out of it. And it's just like, you know, like in winter and people are walking through an area. It's fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Now, once Peter was gone and Marilyn regained consciousness, she managed to get to the road where she was then helped to the hospital. Marilyn also had cuts and bruises to her hands where she had tried to shield the blows, and 56 stitches were needed to close the wound. Although the attack was similar, the tire prints matched previous scenes and her photo fit was one of the most accurate, Marilyn was labelled as unreliable due to her confusing some details which contradicted what they already knew of the killer. It's mad, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost like a head injury could impact a person's ability
yeah.
to recall certain details.
Yeah. Like, what do they fucking expect?
Here's the other thing, Neil. Upon seeing the photo fit in the newspaper, Tracy Brown came forward and said this looked like the same man who had attacked her. But the problem was, Tracy was not believed and they did not follow up, and Marilyn's attack would not be linked to the others until the following year. So even if Marilyn had been, you know, like, let's say she was slightly unreliable in terms of, you know, the trauma, and she was kind of, you know, going, oh, he looks like him, or he looks like him, or somebody does slightly wrong. Tracy's coming forward and going, hey,
yeah,
that's your man.
See, this wouldn't have happened with South Yorkshire Police. This is West Yorkshire Police.
West Yorkshire Police are getting shit on in this one.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
South Yorkshire Police wouldn't do this. Out of the police forces, South Yorkshire's way better than West Yorkshire.
Well, remember that for later.
Oh.
No, I mean that in a positive way.
Okay.
I don't mean that. Remember that for later. I'm going to put you in your fucking place. I did hear it. It sounded a little bit like that. I apologise. While we're on the topic of apologies, I owe you another apology. I actually did. No, yeah. Look, you're sitting up. You're getting all kind of excited. You're getting a bit giddy.
This never happens.
Now, do you remember when you said about the baseball?
Yes.
Or the baseball bat, should I say?
Yeah.
And you said some fella told me that if you have a ball with you, it means like you won't get done for it because it implies that you're going to go play the game.
Yeah.
One of our Patreon members, who is former police, has told me that you are correct. Well, they didn't tell me. They commented on the episode. They told you as well. They told the listeners. You're right. Apparently that kind of gives reasoning and you could potentially, you know.
See, I don't talk fucking bollocks.
No, it's how you worded it though. You're like, oh, like I had a mate who told me. And I was kind of like, who is this guy? Do you get what I mean?
It's just common knowledge that have a ball in your car
I get what you're saying. It makes sense, but I wouldn't have thought it would necessarily be enough. Do you know what I mean?
Huh.
You know, like when you do airsoft, you have to keep the rifle
locked.
Has to be, like, obviously it's not a real gun. It's for airsoft, but it's still something that can hurt a person. You have to have it locked away, not near you.
Yeah, so I don't know about that in the UK and America and that, but over here, you can't have any BBs in the magazine. You can't have the magazine in the gun.
They treat it as an actual gun.
Yeah, and then the gun has to be in a rifle case and the rifle case has to be locked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, just shout out to you and our Patreon member.
Okay.
Because, I know you like it when I have to...
Yeah.
You know.
Doesn't happen often.
Take accountability and go, I was wrong.
Yeah, doesn't happen often.
It's not even so much about me being wrong. It's just saying that you were right.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, I usually am.
Not even just you. I apologize to that random friend of yours from probably 20 years ago who said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. At approximately 9:30 p.m. on the 21st of January, 1978 in Leeds, 21-year-old Yvonne Pearson was murdered. Yvonne left home at 17 and entered into a relationship with a man named Roy, who she would go on to have two children with. Now, because Roy didn't work, it was up to Yvonne to support the family, and she did so through sex work.
And he was okay with that?
Yeah, he didn't want to work, so...
Fucking lazy bastard. Mm. Like.
What's really upsetting as well, Yvonne had been worried about the Ripper, but she was forced to work by her pimp. By the way, I did look up the correct term because I feel like pimp is just not the right word to use.
Mm.
Apparently the correct term is procure.
What?
Yeah. But if I had said she'd been forced to work by her procurer, you'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Will I try and, next time it comes up, will I try and like work that in?
Why does it sound French?
Well, what?
I don't say French, but like, I'm going to continue
to say baguette.
Pimp. Baguette.
No, you fucking don't.
Pan of chocolate.
You do make an effort to avoid...
Croissant.
Anything French or something that could have derived from French.
Yeah. Yeah. Croissant, pan of chocolate. Like the looks I get off baristas. And I go, I'll get a croissant as well.
And fucking rightfully so. Now, once picked up and parked up, Yvonne went to get into the back seat when Peter hit her over the head with a hammer. He then dragged her body towards an old sofa which had been dumped. He stuffed the horsehair filling from the sofa into her mouth and down her throat in an attempt to stop her from groaning. He pulled her trousers down and her bra up. And as he was without a knife, he kicked Yvonne to death, as well as having jumped on her chest with both feet.
But I don't mean to criticise his technique,
mm-hmm.
but he had a hammer. Why has he kicked her to death?
I don't. Obviously, we know Peter has done this previously.
But
I don't
choosing
know.
To do it over.
Yeah. Yeah. Was he annoyed? Was he pissed off that he'd forgot it and then got more angry? Because, you know, like we said, like kicking or stomping on a person is, it just seems particularly vicious, very venomous.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to seem callous, but if you've got a hammer, what? I didn't understand the kicking. So maybe we were venting, you know, erectile dysfunction or...
Yeah. Now, following the murder, Peter then covers her body with soil, turf, rubble and the sofa. Yvonne's body was not found until the 26th of March. And just a reminder, she was murdered in January.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Peter said that this was the first time that he had apologised and cried for what he had done.
Oh.
Mm. He denied having returned to her body, although there was a newspaper left underneath her arm, dated after her death.
Oh.
Mm. On the 31st of January, 1978, in Huddersfield, 18-year-old Helen Ritke was murdered at about 9:15 p.m. Helen was a twin, and she had two other siblings, also twins, born just 1 year later. When their parents broke up, their mother placed them into care. She claimed that she did not have space to house the children. Others said that her new husband didn't want to raise the kids that were not his own, as well as her having been beating her children. At the age of 18, Helen's sister Rita moved to Huddersfield and supported herself through sex work. Rita showed Helen the money she was making, and not long after this, Helen made the move to Huddersfield and began sex work herself. The night of Helen's murder, she had gotten into Peter's car and they had drove to a timber yard. Her body was found here days later with the help of a sniffer dog. She was nude with the exception of her socks and a bra which had been pulled up. Her body had been wedged between a shed and a pile of timber with a sheet of asbestos to cover her. There were wounds to the front and back of Helen's head and three stab wounds to her chest. Elsewhere in the yard was a blood-stained area of the ground, and pubic hair was also found within her mouth. Peter did change his statement regarding the murder of Helen, but in both accounts he states that he had sexual intercourse with her. He said, quote, "Meanwhile, against my wishes, she was in the process of arousing me sexually."
Hang on. What does he think is going to happen when he's going off with a sex worker?
Mm.
What did he mean by that?
So, I can't speak for Peter. You know.
Yeah. It,
not many can.
Hmm.
I'm guessing he means they parked up and she was immediately like trying to get on with it. So she went to touch him and he was like, it was against my wishes.
You picked up a sex worker.
Yeah, but Peter's a bit odd with women. You know.
Well, she's on the clock.
That would be my thought. Once you pick her up.
Yeah.
You know.
She wants to get it done, so she's...
Yeah. Yeah, but it was against Peter's wishes.
Right.
Mm.
What a bastard.
Peter spoke of how the first swing of the hammer didn't inflict the damage he had hoped for, as he had accidentally caught the car while she was in the process of getting into the back seat. Helen, of course, you know, she'd contact had been made, but she was okay at that point. She was terrified and was kind of like, you know, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm.
Peter said, quote, I had no alternative than to go ahead with the act of sex as the only means thereby of persuading her to keep quiet, as I had already dropped the hammer several yards away.
What?
Yeah. So he's basically saying, the jig is up. I had to go through with the act. I did not want to.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do we know if he was using the same hammer?
Yeah, he used multiple.
Okay.
Some were the ball peen and some were the, you know, the claw.
Yeah.
Claw head hammer. Is it claw head hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Claw hammer.
Claw hammer. I knew it didn't sound right.
Yeah, look at you now. And now you know why I call it a Sutcliffe.
Mm.
I don't have a ball one.
No.
Don't need it.
Just a claw one.
That'll do.
Claw head, as they say.
Yeah.
Now, just to kind of interject with something slightly different, and all jokes aside to do with Neil's dad and all that, I did actually ask Neil, you know, could he message his dad and, you know, kind of get his experience and opinion as someone who was not only living in Yorkshire at the time, not only travelling around, you know, he was a lorry driver. He had experience of being stopped multiple times during the investigation. Your dad also went on to drive a taxi.
Yeah.
And while driving a taxi, he would often, you know, look out for sex workers in the area and give them lifts and stuff, you know, just to, well, like I said, just to look out for them.
Yeah.
You know, be someone they knew, or, you know, to be that person they knew they could, you know, just fucking relax with.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Neil messaged his dad and it wasn't very successful. He's a man of few words.
Yeah. So I messaged him. What was it like when Sutcliffe was about? Megan is asking. And he said, well, let's just say all the women round this area were a tad frightened and had no trouble shitting.
Hmm.
That was it.
That was it, yes.
That
was Yeah, I was hoping, you know, he might elaborate slightly, you know, to do with the traffic stops and go, they pull us over and they'd ask X, Y, and Z, and then it was on your way.
I said, and you saw the traffic stops in your lorry? Yes.
Yes. That did happen. Correct.
So then I asked, what was he like personally? And he put, oh, nice chap.
That was you taking the piss, though.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. But yeah, no, there you go. I mean, I really thought you know, that'd be interesting. Like I said, we should have also asked your mother, now that I think about it, you know, as a woman living in the North of England at that time.
Mm.
I did actually say to you, I assume you didn't, because I think we just got a bit carried away with how hilarious your dad's response was.
Mm.
Yeah. In Manchester on the 16th of May, 1978, 40-year-old Vera Millward was murdered. Vera did not have the best of health, and in 1972, she had one of her lungs removed. In 1976, she underwent a hysterectomy, and two further operations in 1977, which left her with constant stomach pains. Vera was in sex work and moved between London and Manchester. On the evening she went out to work, her partner would stay in with the children. One of her regulars would often pay her in either cigarettes or with food for her children. At about 10 p.m. on the 16th of May, Vera went out to meet up with one of her regulars. Now, her regular client didn't show up, and so Vera ventured out to find business. This was when Peter pulled up. Vera's body was found on hospital grounds at about 8 a.m. the following morning by workers. At first they thought it was a tailor's dummy, but upon closer inspection, they realised that this was not the case. There was marks in the mud indicating a struggle, as well as tire tracks. Near to the body was a pool of blood with hair and brain tissue. Vera was laid with her slingback wedges neatly placed on her body and a piece of paper covering her face.
I wonder why he keeps doing that with shoes. Yeah. Neatly placing them. Everything else is like chaotic.
Yeah.
But the shoes neatly placed.
Mm.
I wonder what that is.
Yeah, like, so again, the shoes placed, but like with Irene, it was like the boots placed almost as if, so when you come across her, it looks like she was wearing them or something.
Yeah.
I believe. Mm.
I don't know. Like, do you think he was trying to, that's going to be my signature thing? They're going to call me the shoe killer.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you wouldn't know a Petey.
Hmm. Hmm.
He'd already carved out his thing, though, hadn't he?
I bet he loved the name Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah. Any money.
Yeah.
Her dress had been unzipped and pulled up, exposing her abdomen. Her stomach had been slashed open, with her intestines protruding. Several fractures to her skull had caused bone to lacerate her brain. Her right eyelid had been punctured and her eye bruised. One wound to her chest was thought to have seen 3 separate thrusts, causing damage to her lung, liver and stomach. Vera's death was, evidently, a particularly violent one, so much so that the photos of her body were not given to the jury during the trial. In June of 1978, the month following Vera's murder, the police issued a notice to all forces. The notice stated which assaults and murders they now considered to be linked to the Yorkshire Ripper. These were Anna Rogalski, Olive Smelt, Wilma McCann, Emily Jackson, Irene Richardson, Patricia Atkinson, Jane McDonald, Jean Jordan, Helen Ritke, and Vera Millward. They were fairly sure that the attacks on Maureen Long, Marilyn Moore, and Yvonne Pearson were also linked, as well as the murder of Joan Harrison. Now, we haven't talked about Joan yet, but we will later. And I think that is where we are going to leave it for part 2.
Okay.
There's quite a lot to get through.
Yeah.
You know, I'm doing my best here. It's very full on.
Yeah. So it's a lot more full on than I thought.
Mm.
Like I said, it was twatted with hammer and ran off.
Yeah. A little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know why that didn't pop into my head sooner, but it was when you said intestines were out, and it's like, it was never anything said like this.
No.
It was like, just a little weirdo fucking...
It's very much, he attacked sex workers, hit them with a hammer.
Yeah. I don't know. Fucking West Yorkshire police, you know.
Hmm. Any kind of thoughts, opinions? Because obviously in part 1, we're talking about Peter Sutcliffe. Part 2, we are very much focused on the Yorkshire Ripper, if you get what I mean.
Mm. I didn't know he ventured out as well to Manchester.
Oh, Manny.
Yeah.
Mm.
Wonder why you were there. Yeah, like, what do you want me to say? He was a terrible person.
He was, yeah.
Yeah.
Outrageous, like, even.
I still think at 5 years old, his head should have been caved in with a brick. But that's just me. You'll never get me to change my mind.
No, I get the point you're making. It's just, you're not going to, right, if we had a 5-year-old kid, we're not going to hit it over the head with a brick just in the chance that the kid turns out to be.
He started trying to undress you.
He wasn't trying to undress anyone.
You said he were pulling on his mother's skirt.
No, he was like holding onto his mother's skirt for like stability, comfort, whatever it may have been.
You can't be doing that, Megan. A 5-year-old still got some weight to him. Could have pulled the skirt down.
Do you know, like, if I go to Norman, if he's like standing by, if I go put my hands and go hop up.
Yeah.
He jumps up for me to pick him up.
Yeah.
Does that bother you? Do you feel like he's got legs?
She didn't fucking wave a skirt about and went, come on, Petey.
Well, she might have known. I don't know. I wasn't actually there, Neil. But yeah, it's, how are you feeling now? Because like I said, that the part 2 is quite intense, where it's all the really you know.
Yeah, it was a bit heavy.
Yeah. We're looking at all the, it's just attack and murder one after another.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely heavier than what I was prepared for.
Yeah. Now, we've still got some more to go. But like I said, I have to split it up. Otherwise, we're going to be here all fucking day.
Yeah.
You know?
I appreciate that.
Mm. But that's the other side of it. It's like, it's not just the time it takes. Because it's so much to be taken in, I think you need, I mean, even in just this recording, obviously, Neil's going to edit together, but we have took a break in between.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Yeah. So, Oddity.
The turn spit dog.
The term?
Turn spit dog.
Turn as in turn around or term?
Turn.
Okay.
Rotate.
Right.
Have you heard of the turn spit dog?
Absolutely not.
So, the turn spit dog was a breed of dog which was specifically bred to aid the kitchen. In contrast to many breeds which are bred for appearance, turn spit dogs were bred for their size and ability. With their sturdy, elongated body and short legs, their job was to continuously run in a wheel in order to keep the spit over the fire in rotation. Basically, okay. A hamster in a wheel.
I honestly thought you were going to say they spat.
No.
Like they were spitting.
No.
Into the food or something for seasoning or something. No. I didn't know where you were going with it.
No.
So essentially a big hamster wheel.
Yeah.
With a dog running in it.
Yeah. So very much a working dog, not a sweet little companion to love and shower with affection.
Mm.
That's not me saying it. That's, you know.
Yeah.
These bastards.
Ugly bastards.
Well, the thing is, to me, that is upsetting enough, yeah? But we also need to talk about the conditions that these little doggies had to work in.
Mm.
The dogs, they had to run for hours in hot, smoke-filled kitchens. In some cases, there would be two dogs, and when one would become too exhausted to run in the wheel, they would trade out the dogs, allowing alternating rest periods.
Okay.
Why do you sound positive about that?
Just to get a break.
Do you know why you sound fucking positive about that? Where do you fucking reckon the turn spit dog hails from, Neil?
You're not going to say it, UK.
It's the fucking Brits again. They were predominantly found in England and Wales between the 16th and 19th century among the wealthier families, as well as some inns and taverns.
Understandably.
Is it?
That it'd be wealthier people who'd have them. Yeah.
Well, the inns and taverns, that got me because, you know, I love when you walk into a business and there's a cat or dog floating about, but this doesn't have the same vibe, does it? No, not so much.
Not at all.
Do you know my cousin? She used to work in a hotel where they would just have two Labradors knocking about the reception area.
I think you've told me that before.
You'd walk because I think my mum was giving her a lift and because there was two dogs, I was like, oh, I'll come up. This is when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll come up. I want to see them. And they're just... The desk is there, yeah, in the center, or well, kind of to the side, and the dogs are kind of just there, like they're like statues, but yeah. They're not. Do yeah, you know what yeah. I mean? Also, do you remember when we were in Rome? There was a lot of cats all over the place in Rome.
Well, yeah,
animals in general, but specifically cats in shops. And do you remember we made friends with one of the cats?
We did. Yeah. Got a photo of it somewhere.
I was going to say, do you still have that photo, and we can post it?
Possibly.
Yeah, try and find it. That was a lovely cat.
Might be on the laptop you just wiped.
Could be, yeah. Anyway, by the mid-1800s, turn spit dogs began to wane in popularity. This was due to the invention of mechanical turn spits, which utilised weight, steam and clockwork. And as no one really gave a shite about the dogs other than the labour they provided, the breed went extinct. In Edward Jesse's book, Anecdotes of Dogs, he wrote, quote, "They were long-bodied, crooked-legged and ugly dogs, with a suspicious, unhappy look about them, as if they were wary of the task they had to do and expected every moment to be seized upon to perform it." Like, no fucking shit, Eddie. That's what they were bred for.
But we still have that breed. It's describing a sausage dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we still have it.
They are pretty similar, yeah. But, I mean, they look kind of different, but that would be the nearest equivalent shape-wise.
Yeah.
I don't want to say body because turnspit was a bit sturdier
right.
than a sausage doggy.
Right, okay.
But yeah. Now this book, by the way, I found an old copy of it on eBay for over £300. Now, if we ever come into the type of money that I can justify spending that amount on a book, I'm getting it.
You want to spend 300 quid on a book?
It's a book all about dogs. I love it. I really want it. That's one of those things, you know, one of those like items you just have.
Can't we find it on Kindle or something?
I have like, no, because I want the actual book.
Oh, you're one of them.
That's one of those you like have. That's that book. Yeah. Look at it there. Don't touch it now.
Yeah.
It's right there. You can look with your eyes.
One of our patrons, I can't remember what the book was, but they were like, oh, I read this in the book. Neil, I'll send you a copy. And it's like, I don't read. Save your postage. Yeah. I don't read books.
Would you listen to an audiobook?
No.
Oh.
Like, I don't really listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Really? I ain't got the attention span for it. Fair play to you listeners.
But yeah, anyway, there you go. Turnspit doggies.
Mm.
Bit sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
It's a working dog. There's plenty of working dogs.
Yeah, but these dogs were just, you know, like
Japanese akitas are to fucking hunt bears.
I'm sure there were families who did, you know, cuddle up with the dog.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, they were considered functional. Well, if you know what I mean.
Put it this way. I would rather be running on a fucking hamster wheel than hunting bears. But you don't give a shit about Japanese akitas.
I don't particularly like any dogs being used solely for work.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
What's your take on horses?
Well, I'm not a big fan of horses personally.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't have anything against a horse. I don't wish harm on it.
Donkey.
What about it? It's kind of a similar thing. I don't wish harm on it. I don't really like animals. Right. I understand, you know, like a collie being used on a farm. Yeah?
Yeah.
But I don't think it should be, that's why you have the dog.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Same with a horse. Right, a horse is capable of carrying a person or carrying some weight, but not you solely for that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, years ago, yes, that's what people did. They didn't have another means.
Mm.
Preferably not, but that's what, you know, fucking 1800s and that, you know, as you would say. Yeah. No good.
No good. But camels.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.